Hi, this is Lindsay Levin, Chief Marketing Officer of RX Bar, and you're listening to the Brand Lab Series podcast from AE Marketing Group.
Learn from today's most innovative brands and observe how they empower employees, engage consumers, design products, and co-create experiences together. Welcome to the Brand Lab Series from AE Marketing Group.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Walker. Welcome to a new episode of the Brand Lab Series podcast. Each week, we broadcast from 1871 Chicago, and we explore today's most innovative brands alongside today's most insightful executives and entrepreneurs. This week, I'm super excited to invite on the show Florian Fahler. He's the founder and CEO of Hannah's Bretzel. We're going to talk about Uber competition, Uber brands, Uber customer experience, and of course, Uber sandwiches. So with that said, let's enter the Brand Lab. Hi, Natalie. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Brian. I'm a little hungry after all this sandwich talk.
Well, it's funny because I haven't actually had anything to eat today, which is very rare before we record that I wouldn't have had anything to eat. But what's really cool is I know a couple of weeks ago we had Lindsay Levin from RX Bar on, and I was a huge fan of RX Bar. And I'm equally excited to have Florian on today because I think the sandwiches at Hannah's Bretzels are some of the best, not just in Chicago, but anywhere. And I love them. I just sent some of my team, my summer interns over there this week to try them too. So I'm thrilled to have them on the show. So Florian, welcome to the Brand Labs.
Well, thank you for having me. Very excited to be here.
Great. Well, one of the things that I also think is interesting is, like me, you have a marketing background. So talk about how you went from being an ad guy to making Uber sandwiches.
Well, I think the journey started back after I finished my bachelor degree in marketing and finance. And I worked in brand management in a German consumer goods company. And that was back in 1990, early 1990s. And at that time, I learned about what is now known as the internet. And I went to New York and I started working in 1992 for an internet firm. That was focused, of all places, on the art market. And I worked with them for 6 years, very entrepreneurial outfit, and really started embracing the whole idea of starting a business, which is much more common in the United States than it was at the time necessarily in Germany. And after 6 years there, being a marketer, I was very interested to continue my marketing education, so to say. And Leo Burnett offered me a position, so I joined them in Chicago. That was late 90s, 99. And I thought I would be there only for a couple of years and potentially travel with them around the world, but got stuck for 6 years, met my wife, and then also started Hannah's. Being at Leo Burnett was an incredible experience. I learned a lot there. But ultimately, I wanted to be back at the entrepreneurial side. And I always wanted to start my own business. And I don't think there's any country in the world better to do that than here in the United States.
Hannah's Bretzels is celebrating its 13-year anniversary. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, yeah. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Time flies.
I have an exquisite knowledge of how 13 years feels since this year marks my 13-year wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
13 years is a fun time.
It is. Yeah. It's a great number. I don't know why people don't like it. I think it looks great.
I used to live on 13th Street on the 13th floor in Chicago. Ooh. And it was probably one of the most favorite places I ever lived. So,
see?
Yeah.
Well, think back to the early years, and we'd love to hear a good story from the good old days of how things got started.
Well, it's kind of nice to do that because that first location over at 180 West Washington is getting a makeover, and we're going to reopen that in probably the next 2 weeks, so first week of June. I'm very excited about that. You know, when I worked at Leo Burnett, I had to go for lunch every day. And I felt while some of the places were kind of good, I felt there was not a lot of innovation going on in the category. And everybody seemed to be kind of competing on price and size rather than flavors and ingredients. When I started looking into Hannah's and wrote the business plan, I really wanted to focus on other attributes for the brand than what was currently at the time in the market, which was more corner bakery, cozy, Sopraffina, Cafe Bacci. Those were the big ones at the time, still are to a degree. And if you kind of look at the metrics of things, if in the sandwich category, we really wanted to be the premium sandwich maker in the market. We wanted to introduce flavors and ingredients that were not common or not at all known at the time. Parma ham from Italy or Serrano ham from Spain were pretty much unknown. We had to do a lot of explaining at the time, and it was an interesting experience. In the beginning, I thought I'm just going to do it on the side, but then it mushroomed into a very nice business indeed.
Well, it's really interesting because I think a lot of great entrepreneurial stories kind of start on the side. But, you know, in addition to the great sandwiches, I think the best thing you have actually is your bread. So talk a little bit more about that early startup, where all that came from. I'd love to have you talk about that a little bit more for our audience.
It really started when whenever I traveled back. My parents at the time lived in Stuttgart in Germany. Now they live in Munich and my sister lives in Berlin. Stuttgart is kind of the pretzel bread capital of Germany, and you find it everywhere there. And it's a very traditional bread, and everybody in the morning goes by the bakery or goes to the bakery and buys 5-6 pretzels to take them home for early breakfast or on the way to work. And I always brought pretzel bread back with me from Stuttgart, freshly baked. My friend Frank Ellinger, third generation master baker in Germany, which is a very big degree, takes years to get, always baked them super fresh for me to pick up before I head to the airport, specially packaged so they arrive tip top. And then I invited my friends over and I said, guys, I brought pretzel bread. And everybody was like, oh, pretzel bread. And that is how it started. We initially made sandwiches with the pretzel bread and had wine and beer. And it was just tasty. And they were like, you need to do something with this pretzel bread. This is unbelievably good pretzel bread. And that's how it started. It's like it started very innocent. And as I looked into doing something with the pretzel bread, which initially I thought putting little kiosks all over Chicago so people on the go can grab a pretzel and then keep it that way, the city wouldn't allow that. So I needed to look for a retail location. Now, to do a retail location and just sell a pretzel, I felt was a little too thin. And that's when we started looking into high-end sandwiches. So it kind of started from there and evolved as the market conditions allowed me to operate. And then once that thought took hold, we created just sandwiches. That's how it evolved. And then finally was Hannah's Pretzel.
Was there any other brand or inspiration that you feel like really helped develop the concept that you were dreaming of?
Whole Foods is a groundbreaking business when it comes to food in the United States. I'm saddened to see how some people talk negatively about them because of price, because how deep their commitment is, not only in relation to their vendors and the farmers, but their commitment to bringing just more wholesome food and educating the customer along the way what that means. For me, Whole Foods was instrumental as a inspiration, but also a place that I shopped and where I did a lot of market research. And I, you know, between qualitative and quantitative research, I think one of the best aspects of research is just talking to the customer. So you just go where the place is, where you find that customer, where you think the knowledge is, which for me was in the Whole Foods aisle. And I would chat up as many people as possible. Sometimes they would tell me, you're freaking me out, so get away from me. And others would open up very nicely and tell their whole story about why they shop there and what's going on and the food and the health and they learned this and that and the other, because right around that time where Whole Foods grew, the internet came along too. And with the internet, a whole range of information was publicly available all of a sudden that in the past was not. In the past, your relationship to health was your doctor. It was a one-on-one. Maybe you had a nutritionist, maybe. Or it was your trainer in the gym, if you had a trainer. Or maybe some magazine that you subscribe to. But now with the internet, there was such a depth to information that finally food got a platform where it could become not only something that you fill your belly with the biggest quantity at the lowest price, but actually what food is supposed to do. It's supposed to give you, it has healing properties, it has gives you energy, is fun in the same time if prepared right. It educated the customer, and consequently, while I was watching Whole Foods and talking to customers there and making the sandwiches on the pretzel bread at home, the idea that a fast casual restaurant based on the Whole Foods principles would resonate with the public is really where it started. And that's where then obviously also the focus comes on the organics and the environment and the whole grain nutrition and food transparency, which is something I love and I think should be much more demanded out there across the board. We should know what we eat. We should know how much sodium is in it. We should know how many calories are in it, because that is valuable information that we as humans have to look out for. If you go deeper and you look at the obesity situation in Illinois, you have, I think, 70% that are overweight and 25% of the population is obese, and it is a problem. And I think that food transparency will help a lot. I think that altogether, now Chicago has just been voted the best food city in the United States by Condé Nast magazine. Well-deserved. Incredible chefs here. Incredible talent. Incredible innovation in the food category. And it's very encouraging. And I was just really happy to be part of that journey in Chicago so far. But Whole Foods was a huge inspiration. So that was the last piece of how I started Hannah's and what inspired me to go the route that I took.
As you've grown and scaled so much over the last 13 years, and I know you started at the 180 location, but talk about how did you maintain that quality brand and that quality customer experience as you not only grew menu items or mm-hmm. employees or locations? Because the scale challenge, as you know, of growing a business is where you can really start to run into some bumps.
Absolutely, you can. Consistency, I think, is the biggest challenge of running a business like mine across all locations, to maintain a daily standard where you are. You want to keep it as simple as possible and heavily invest into training and development of your team, but also commit to the pillars that your brand stands on. For us, it's organic ingredients, whole grain nutrition, very nutrition focused, nutritional transparency, and then a strong focus on environmental practices. That means not only on the nutritional sides, but also the materials we use. We want to deliver our food with the smallest environmental footprint possible. All the stores are powered by electric and wind, 100%. We only have biodegradable packaging. We want to get to like a zero waste cycle. We're very close with that. Composting is big on our mind. It's very expensive still. It hasn't reached scale yet. But it's something that we would love to see more.
Well, much like you mentioned earlier, some of the menu items that were relatively unheard of in terms of some of the ingredients in your sandwiches, you've always been a little bit ahead of the curve. I know as long as I could remember going to your stores, you were very transparent about some of the ingredients in your food. That's kind of become a little bit mainstream today. As you continue to grow, you mentioned an interesting word earlier, innovation. How do you and how does your team kind of look at innovation through the pipeline of either developing new ways to deliver your products or menu items or some of the things that go into the backside of running a business? Like, what does innovation look like for you guys?
Well, not on the food side, let me just, as an example, mention our new Prezzaola sandwich, right? And most of our customers did not know what Prezzaola is. It's a northern Italian cured beef, dry-aged. It's one of the most delicious cured beefs that you can eat, extremely lean, very popular in Europe, made in the southern part of Switzerland, where it's called Bündnerfleisch, and in the northern part of Italy, there it's called Bresaola, same thing. It's a mountain beef, and it's delicious. It's expensive. You can get it at Edeli and at Hannah's Pretzel on a sandwich. That's exactly where it's at. And we discussed for a long time whether we should do a Bresaola sandwich or another chicken sandwich, because chicken is very popular, right? But for me, doing another chicken sandwich is just not that interesting. We might do it or we might not. But Bresaola I found interesting because it will introduce a new flavor and food experience and educate our customers further in what something can be, what can be on a sandwich. Of course, because it was expensive, it also meant it's the most expensive sandwich we have right now. But it's the number five seller. Once you eat it, it is delicious, and it's well worth the money in my mind. It's great nutrition.
So you must not have heard us talking about how we hadn't had breakfast, because we're all hungry listening to this interview.
I should have brought some food. I feel bad.
I tell you what, now I know what I'll be ordering at the 400 North location
for
lunch today.
We'd love to see how you like it.
Yeah. But just to follow up on that, and I know it's something we were chatting about for a minute before we actually started recording too, is so you do have a range of a few maybe more traditional sandwiches mm-hmm. in the American sense, mm-hmm. like the club and some of those others, because you just mentioned this delicious sounding sandwich is number five. So how are you tracking that to see like which sandwiches are performing better, and do you ever decide maybe to pull something on or off the menu? And do you also see our customers typically, and as I joked earlier too, I'm kind of a creature of habit. Mm-hmm. So I sometimes don't go out of my swim mm-hmm. lane when it comes to, you know, Sergio's ham versus a different sandwich. So how are you looking at data that way?
Well, I mean, obviously, point of sale systems today are very sophisticated, and they give you a range of data on a daily basis. That is absolutely not a problem. It's very quick. Technology is where it's at. We are going right now through round three of technological innovation within Hannah's. Nothing particularly incredibly groundbreaking. Every other competitor that I know where, or know the owners, goes through the same challenges. And this is all about having the data available. You want to see revenue, you want to see cost of goods, you want to see labor, and you want to see daily on the phone. That's the direction that it goes. And we are investing into that. There's different point of sale providers in the category that are far more advanced than others. It's a very dynamic market. And for us, when we started, it was very cumbersome. And when I just stayed with the point of sale system, because we had in two or three registers in the front of the house and a big chunky box in the back of the house that was supposed to do backups of data. And of course it crashed. And then we learned that the backup drive had crashed too. So the data was gone. And at that time, we really wanted to go into the cloud, right? We were like, why do we need to have this box? Why do we need to have infrastructure? Why can't we have this somewhere? And moved on to a different point of sale provider with that isn't the cloud right now, much less expensive. Was one-fourth of the cost. The initial point-of-sale system was maybe like $25,000. The second one was $5,000. Now everything is in the cloud, which is, I think, much smarter. But now the current one that we use is not as flexible and open a platform that we need to have auxiliary services attached to it that allow us to get the data quicker and managed. So we need to move on to the next platform that allows us to do that. And it's very important to continue to do these investments and look out for particularly the data. I think the category that we're in is extremely data-driven. Aside of intuition, like the Bresaola sandwich, where you say, no, I'm going to go this way. I'm going to do something that nobody has ever heard of, let alone knows how to pronounce, right? I didn't know how to pronounce it in the beginning myself.
And I'm not sure I could pronounce
Bresaola.
It. Bresaola.
Bresaola. it's fun.
Well, so, I know when I go to order it this afternoon, they'll at least know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely, okay. They will. Yeah, they will be like, oh, you want that delicious sandwich, right? Yeah. So that's great. But so technologically, that's a very important thing. And that's how you do it. I think, though, that even if you do something tried and true, let's say like a club, you can make that club a little bit different and in the flavor experience. And I think we achieved that. It's a very, very tasty sandwich. I just love it. I could eat it every day. Like all the foods that we do, turkey cheddar is probably the most common. And it's a lot of go-to sandwich. But what you mentioned yourself with how you approach our menu, that you always order the same thing, that is one of the biggest hurdle of our category. I know customers since we've been to Hana since 5 years. They come every week. They eat the same sandwich each and every time. And here's what they say. They say, I came today to try a different one. But once I stood there, I went to the one that I love. So what do we do about this, right? Well, we're thinking about a Try Me promotion, right? So there are some ideas we have, but we would love to see our customers try themselves through the menu. It's very interesting. It's in our category one of the biggest hurdles, no matter who it is. If you go into the restaurant, sit-down restaurant environment, customers typically don't eat the same thing twice. If you go into a sit-down restaurant, let's say Blackbird or Avec or any of those really great restaurants in Chicago, if you see the menu and then you come back half a year later, it's still the same menu, it's kind of weird, right? You're like, why didn't they change the menu? Don't they go with the seasons? I want to eat something else. Not with our category. Our category, it's all the same. And so that's why we rarely ever remove a sandwich, because if we remove a sandwich, there is a minor revolution going on and we get hate emails. We did it. We did it once with the Black Forest ham, and I will never forget it. The people were like, I'm not going to come to Hana's anymore. You took my sandwich away. And it's interesting, the emotional bond that develops between that sandwich and that customer is fascinating and beautiful at the same time. Yeah.
You know, you look at other websites of fast casual restaurants, and you won't usually see them dedicate an entire section to culture. After talking with you for just a short time already, we can tell you exude your company culture. When you read your company culture on your website, it says you operate under one rule, which is to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And why is that so important to Hana's Bretzels?
Because doing the right thing is a very simple and very powerful phrase. We decided that everybody that works with us at Hana's is a grown-up, and we want to treat them like grown-ups. The typical attitude towards a growing business is to establish a lot of rules. You don't do this, you don't do that, you can't do this, you can't decide that, you have to follow this rule, that rule, and the other rule. We've kind of went down that same path by the fourth location. And also by the fourth location, we came to realize that we had very well defined to the outside world why somebody should engage with our brand and eat the food at Hana's. What we hadn't done is explain to the inside world, the team that works with us every day, what the purpose of it all is when we get up in the morning and why we're doing this every day. So we created what we called the Culture Council, and it was about 30 team members from part-time to full-time to salaried to investors. We wanted to get vendors, but none of them made themselves available, which was unfortunate. But still, we had a really deep group. It took us 9 months to define who our six stakeholders are, what our purpose is, and how do we want to relate to those six stakeholders. It is on our website very prominently. It is in the back of the house of at Hana's Bretzel, and we try to implement it. And it was an interesting journey for us to do that. It actually was cleansing in a way, nearly. We had team members who couldn't deal with the consequence of the culture that we created. One of the things that was the outcome of that cultural approach of doing the right thing was that we did away with vacation rules and sick day rules. You go on vacation, go on vacation. You need to go on vacation at Hana's at least once a year for 2 weeks. Minimum, and you need to be gone. And I don't want to see an email, and nobody wants to hear from you. You need to be out of the company. Go travel, do something. We are on the planet for a limited period of time. Let's not kid ourselves. So have fun while you do it, and don't live to work, right? sick days, same thing. If you're sick, stay home. And we didn't want to create an administration around counting who has been on vacation, how long, and can they go, and what if they have an emergency, but they had their two-week vacation. Now I'm not going to give you the vacation day, or I'm going to deduct the salary out of it. I think that is very harsh and not really, I think, contemporary. So that was a consequence of the cultural approach of what we did, which was more humane, but also I find more innovative, and also treating the team that you work with that is there by choice as the grown-ups that they are. And they are responsible grown-ups. And everybody, I think, including everybody here in this room, knows what it is to do the right thing. I think that's very simple. It's a certain code of ethics you have, or you don't. And if you don't, those not so good apples, they will sort themselves out in a concept like this. And so creating the culture was challenging. Much more challenging was to implement it and have everybody live up to it. And it is a continuous journey. There's by no means a perfection at Hannah's. I'm sure there would be some former team members out there who've worked with us who say like, ah, that it's not at all like this, or it's not at all like that, because there's a wide range of ideas surrounding what it means to have a culture of doing the right thing. But it is a start, and I think it's something you can build a business on. And that means also, though, that there's a responsibility that you create an environment within a company where ideas are free to flow up just as much as ideas are implemented from the top down. And a little bit that in a nutshell is what we try to accomplish at Hannah's, also with the culture that we put into place.
Well, I'm so glad that you expanded upon that, because it builds kind of nicely off of actually just last week's episode with Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, who's very big about culture. But I think it's also more important to me personally, too, because as someone who grew up in marketing, I talk so much about how a brand is bigger than just the advertising. It's the customer experience. It's the culture. It's the employee advocacy. It's so many things really define a brand. And that's what this show, the Brand Lab series, is all about. So to hear you expand upon all these things is just great. And I'm also excited because as we were talking before we recorded, we have some of our summer interns in here. So for them to hear and observe you talk about brand through this whole lens is really great. So as we start to wind down, one question I have for you is, And maybe this is a bad assumption, but I get the impression that maybe for now at least you had resisted the urge to maybe franchise or maybe expand beyond where you are geographically today. I'm sure you've had the thoughts, but I'm just curious, you know, maybe why you hadn't done that so far and if that kind of has ever weighed on you over the last 13 years.
Very good question. And obviously, yes, my members of my LLC, my investors probably would love to listen to that answer the most. But we've discussed it and we've looked at it and we continue to look at it. The fast casual market over the last 5 years particularly has exploded. Let's just see where we were on our journey, right? We opened in 2005, 2007, number two came along. 2008-09 was the financial crisis. Everything came to a grinding halt. We at that time had the money together to open locations 3 and 4 right then and there. We had to get through the financial crisis. And the financial crisis really scared everybody. It scared my members, scared particularly me, because let's not forget, we signed big leases. And it's a personal commitment. I'm the one who's responsible, and I'm the one who's paying if something goes wrong. And so does every other entrepreneur out there. It's an entrepreneurial risk you take. That's why you go the path that you do. The financial crisis was really a wake-up call, something I would never thought would be even possible, but it happened. And 2010, we get to open location 3, 2011, location 4. And then the whole category started to explode. So basically what was before that a rather small niche market that was occupied by a few players, more and more players came into the Chicago market. The economy recovered, rents shot up. And today, we looked at Washington, we looked at Denver, we looked at Boston, and they're still on our mind. But let's take, for example, Protein Bar. Went to Washington, opened 4 locations, closed 2. just going to another market doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a better business or a stronger business. It might just mean that the headaches incrementally increase. And growth in it by itself for me is not a strategy. I want to be around in 10 years from now. I want to create a solid rate of return. How we get there for me is a marathon, not a sprint. And right now I'm concerned as a business owner about the rents, which in Chicago have been going up tremendously. I'm concerned about the regulatory environment, minimum wage is going up. You have the healthcare, which I'm all for, both of those. I think there also was, there's the sick leave ordinance now where you have to pay 1 week of sick leave to your hourly team members, which right on, if they get sick, they should have the chance to be sick so they get healthy again. Hourly team members not being paid when they're not there is very hard on them. It forces them to be in the business at any point of time. They deserve to have rest too in case their body needs it. And so these kind of ordinances are something that I think is important and they're good. The problem is they're all happening at once. And so you need to be able to digest the impact that you have financially, so in the framework that you have. And right now the cost pressure from a rent side and from a regulatory side is such that the need to raise prices is there, but you can't do that very radically. You have to do it incrementally and in small steps because otherwise your customer base will not be very happy about it. And so right now, I think you want to be careful how you expand. Maybe that's my German side. But if the opportunity presents itself, I mean, we have another location opening after this one over at 150 North Riverside. We're looking at locations all the time. We have a location team. We look at other markets. We look at dynamics there. And I think if the right moment comes along, we'll do that step.
Well, in addition to talking a lot about brands on this podcast over the last 2 years, we often take the entrepreneurial lens and viewpoint as well. And as a fellow Goldman Sachs 10,000 yeah. business and alum, I can certainly appreciate some of those pressures that a lot of people don't understand on the outside looking in. So I think that's some really interesting insight there. So as we wrap up, you know, we're going to turn it over to Natalie to do one of her favorite parts of the show that we don't always get the chance to do, and that's a quick little speed round. So I don't know what she's going to throw at you, though. So okay. She can be –
Should I loosen up? I'm going to loosen up.
She might surprise you. We'll see.
Okay.
All right, Florian Faller, are you ready for this?
Sure.
Okay. What is your favorite meal outside of your restaurant?
Oh, that is so hard. That's an unfair question. can I break this up in components?
Well, am I allowed to? It's a speed round.
It's a speed round. Okay, fine. My favorite meal in Chicago is the mushrooms at Vera on Lake Street. They're outstanding and they're just mushrooms. Best mushrooms in the city.
Nice. Okay, great. What's your favorite restaurant in Chicago other than yours?
Blackbird.
Blackbird. Ooh, okay.
Ooh, see, that was fast. That was
absolutely. Fast. Hands down. Absolute great group. One of hospitality. Amazing innovators. That restaurant has been around since 1999, something like this. Going strong. I admire these people. Fantastic.
Great praise. Okay. What's your go-to sandwich at your own restaurant?
The salmon. Wild caught Atlantic smoked salmon, not on the endangered species list. We don't make money with that sandwich. It should cost $15, but we do it because it's the right thing to do.
Very good. Okay. And what's your dream location to open up a Hannah's Pretzels outside of Chicago?
I would love to be in New York. I've lived in New York. I love New York. I've always had my heart in New York. I have my heart in Chicago too, but New York is one of these cities for some weird reason that just resonates with me deeply. I'm there all the time. My daughter's Hannah, that's where Hannah's Pretzel comes from, and Ella live in outside of New York in New Jersey. And I go back and forth, and New York is really where I would love to see a Hannah's Pretzel operate.
So that speed round was pretty tame today, Natalie. So it wasn't bad. But you know what's always funny is we get the most insightful guests like you, Florian, on the show. And they always get stumped by a speed round. And I was surprised that first question, although in a way I'm not, because I can sense that you're a foodie. So to pare it down to just one is interesting. But, you know, one other interesting fact besides Flory and I both being part of the Goldman Sachs business program is that we both live in the same neighborhood. You've been there a lot longer than I have. And I know Vera, but I had no idea that they have these amazing mushrooms. So
Vera is one of, I think, one of the best restaurants in the city. It's just not glitzy. So it's a great chef there and true Spanish cooking, tapas, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's not helping the hunger pains this morning, but now I can put something else on the list and it's in the neighborhood. And you're right about Blackbird, which consistently for over a decade now, at least, has been so, so good.
And the staying power is impressive. And the consistency, talking about consistency, very, very impressive.
So I know this was probably a little longer of a episode than some of our listeners are used to, but it would have been a shame to break it into two parts, and it would have been a shame to break up all this insight, because in addition to talking about all the amazing food and supply chain and culture and social good that goes into your business, you shared so much about brand and your passions and how it came to be in the entrepreneur lens. So I knew that this would be a great show. I'm glad that we were able to get you on. I know you're super busy. You've got a lot on your plate right now between travel, between the 180 West Washington shop. You've got us all hungry, and we'll be over at the 400 North LaSalle location for lunch today. So as we wrap up, how can our audience learn a little bit more about Hannah's Pretzel?
Well, you can go to, of course, hannaspretzel.com. The most information is there. Obviously, we're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. Follow us. There's always announcements coming from that angle and news. We have on the website an ability to sign up for our email newsletter that we send out. Not too often. We don't want to clog email boxes, but that is probably the best route to go.
All right. Are you salivating for at least breakfast or lunch, Natalie?
Yeah, and I think I'm going to go have something kind of special, you know, because his talk about fancy food is inspiring me.
Yeah. Florian, thank you so much for being on the Brand Lives.
Thank you for having me. It was great fun. Thank you.
I want to thank our listeners for joining us in the Brand Lab today, and to invite you back next Tuesday as we continue our journey of today's most innovative brands, as we learn how they empower employees, engage consumers, design products, and co-create experiences together. To listen to other Brand Lab Series podcast episodes, visit brandlabseries.com. Follow us on Twitter at Brand Lab Series. And if you have any questions or ideas for a future Brand Lab Series podcast, email us at info@brandlabseries.com.
To learn more about Hannah's Pretzel, visit hannahspretzel.com or follow us on Instagram and Facebook.